Welcome to the daily VFN Radio Highlights, where we're keeping the conversation light at VFNTV.com. Enjoy.
It's amazing the lies that are being told now. It is totally amazing the lies that are being told about America. But the cool thing is about that is that we understand who the liar is and the father of lies, and just don't buy into the lies. Believe the truth. And if you have not yet heard Organizer of the Light versus Organizer of the Day versus Organizers of the Night, you got to hear it because you'll understand. I mean, it is a cranked up notch of luciferic acid of lies poured over a people, a business, a relationship, whatever the enemy wants to take down. And you're seeing it happen right now to Israel as well. And so be encouraged that you're just hearing this last gulping cry of darkness, but I'm hearing a sound. I'm hearing a sound of a great awakening. I'm seeing people begin to wake up and realize I cannot be silent. I've got to stand up. I'm seeing people who you wouldn't even ever think would step up. I'm a step up for Israel.
Yes.
And they're seeing just comments, and Israel's showing the church how we need to react. We need to deal with things calmly, with great humility, but with definiteness of the whole thing. It's very specific. Search. Well, what is
definitive measures?
No. What did Kerry say, Secretary Kerry?
Pinpoint.
We need to deal with things with pinpoint accuracy, and so we're going to be talking about in today's program and future programs about this. But one is this amazing thing that kept me up late last night. It was a speech given by Susan Rice, and we're going to be talking. We're going to actually play the speech for you because I'm dumbfounded, and I hate to be. Man, I just don't want to be critical. I don't want to be, but there's just something in my gut. Last time she took a mic, it was Benghazi.
Yeah,
five times she took the mic or something.
And but it's so wonderful. You know, it's like. It's like it's almost like Baal when Baal was prophesying over Israel, and they, you know, the guy wanted him to do right. some bad things. He's like, I can't help but speak what's right, and she spoke 100% in a powerful way, what was right. I mean, from the beginning to the end, she was beautiful. I've never seen more of a beautiful woman and leader than what she's. I'm watching her, and she just kept me up. I'm just thinking, man, what you're saying about Israel, it's like pinpoint accuracy about who Israel is and who America is. And but I just got this lingering, it's a video thing in the back of my head, you know, but we want you to hear this because even it's truth. It is 100% truth because remember, there's only 530 folks in Washington, D.C. There's 300 some odd million in America, and America is for Israel. Mm-hmm. Congress is for Israel.
Oh yeah.
And remember, executive branch has one, and judiciary branch has
one.
Eight.
No. Oh. I thought you meant. Never
mind. Supreme Court judge has eight. Sorry, I've been more specific. We're still learning too.
It's nine.
It's not. It could be nine. It has to be. It can't be an even number.
Nine.
It has to be nine. It's nine.
What?
He was thinking about the one.
I remember the test.
You put Pat and me together and it's nine, right? Yeah. My eight and your one.
See?
And so, but that's nine. But then you have one congressperson for every 700,000 people in this nation, 700,000 folks, which means that is represented. They are for Israel. Mm-hmm. They are overwhelmingly for Israel across all party lines, you know, and just had like, some reason this thought came to me. Lord, give us five parties. No, anyway. So which party do you fit in? Jesus's party. We're going to go right into Susan Rice. She is the National Security Advisor to the President. She was the former ambassador for something. And
I think Libya. I'm not sure.
Oh, really?
I'm not sure. Really? We can find out for you.
Yeah, we'll find out. Libya, that's interesting because that was the whole thing that she was speaking about.
Right.
And she's the one that spoke for former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. She's the one that went up front, and it was pretty interesting because what she said and what was in her talking points after it was walked out for a while, they said, you know, those talking points weren't true. you know, whether they came from her, whether they came from CIA and all these, everybody disowned all that. Mm-hmm. And since then they found out it had nothing to do. Benghazi had nothing to do with, a videotape being made.
He's former ambassador to the United Nations.
Yeah. Former ambassador to the United Nations, which is pretty interesting because remember this, being former ambassador to the United Nations for America, she saw the happening. She understands the United Nations, and she'll talk about that. And without knowing everything, it just sounds so good. Mm-hmm. And it's right. I mean, understand that there's only 530 folks in Washington, D.C. Most of America's for Israel. Mm-hmm. Most of Congress, like I said, is for Israel. But it doesn't mean, I mean, hearing some tapes even of Richard Nixon, those tapes that he had in his office, I mean, he talked terribly about Israel. Mm. And just because America's for Israel doesn't mean whoever chose to be leader is for or against. I'm not saying either one, right. But I'm just saying this is so amazing. And when she says, she's going to say something in the speech that we're going to stop and talk about a little bit, kind of gives some meaning to it. Because what we'll try to do is, like, we want to be able to look at it and just kind of get a perspective and kind of just see, you know, what's being said. Because this is a moment. This is a moment where America's national security advisor to the president stands up in the name of the president, in the name of America, and says, you know, we deeply, 100% stand for Israel. And it's just a powerful thing. So I want you to hear this speech, and it's going to bless you. Just be okay with it, because you're going to enjoy every moment of it. And we sure appreciate, you know, former Ambassador Susan Rice with this stand and the president for taking this particular stand. Watch this. Listen up.
Today, together, all of us who care about the state of Israel are again confronted with the challenges of a dangerous and imperfect world, of sirens in shelters, of young people called yet again to war.
Truth is, Israel is killing innocent people in Gaza. Stop the bombing, stop the killing. Stop the bombing, stop the killing. End the siege of Gaza. End the siege of Gaza. Stop the murder, stop the hate.
These are difficult days. I was speaking of sirens and shelters, of young people called yet again to war, of a land where, in the haunting phrase of Yitzhak Rabin, parents bury their children. Today is the first day of Av, the month when Jews commemorate the destruction of the first and second temples. It's a reminder that the Jewish people have endured much worse than rockets and survived much stronger enemies than Hamas. You've been tested by tragedy and time, by history and hatred. But each time, Am Yisrael Chai, the people of Israel live. This is a time of worry for all who care about Israel. But here's one thing you never have to worry about: America's support for the state of Israel. As President Obama declared before the Israeli people in Jerusalem, quote, "So long as there is a United States of America, you are not alone." And that's why, from the moment the terrorist rockets began to rain down on Israel, this administration, from President Obama on down, has made it clear: Israel has the same unequivocal right to self-defense as every other nation. No nation can accept terrorists tunneling into its territory or rockets crashing down on its people. President Obama has been equally clear about who's been responsible for the violence. Hamas fired the rockets. Hamas deliberately targeted Israeli citizens, particularly civilians. Hamas refused an early plan for a ceasefire. Hamas, in a time of glaring human need, instead of investing in the future of Gaza's children, built tunnels to kidnap and kill Israelis. So Hamas initiated this conflict, and Hamas has dragged it on. But America and Israel are also united by a shared belief we each strive to honor, that every person is created equal. And B'Tselem Elohim, in the image of God. I know we all share deep concern about the suffering and deaths of innocent people that arise from a conflict like this one, in Gaza as well as in Israel. The people of Gaza, many of whom disapprove of Hamas and suffer under its misrule, are trapped in the crossfire. The loss of children has been particularly heartbreaking. As President Obama and Prime Minister Netanyahu discussed yesterday, the United States supports an immediate, unconditional humanitarian ceasefire. That humanitarian ceasefire should lead to a permanent cessation of hostilities based on the November 2012 ceasefire agreement. For the sake of innocents on both sides, the rockets must stop. We need to bring the violence and civilian casualties to an end. And we're concerned that continued fighting could further destabilize the West Bank. We need to protect Israel's security and help it reach an arrangement where it will not be attacked again in another year or two. We also believe that any process to resolve the crisis in Gaza in a lasting and meaningful way must result in the disarmament of terrorist groups. So we will work closely with Israel, regional partners, and the international community to achieve this goal once a sustainable ceasefire is agreed. Let me also take a moment to acknowledge, as Ambassador Dermer did, the extraordinary efforts of Secretary Kerry. I must tell you, we've been dismayed by some press reports in Israel mischaracterizing his efforts last week to achieve a ceasefire. We know these misleading reports in turn raise concerns here at home in America. The reality is that John Kerry, on behalf of the United States, has been working every step of the way with Israel in support of our shared interests. Both in public and in private, we have strongly supported Israel's right to defend itself against rockets and tunnel attacks, and we've engaged together in sensitive negotiations. We will continue to do so, and will continue to set the record straight when anyone distorts the facts. As we pursue diplomacy, we're grateful that the amazing Iron Dome anti-rocket system, researched and funded jointly by Israel and America, stands watch over Israel's cities. During my most recent visit to Israel in May, I saw firsthand the technology at Paul Mahim Air Force Base. I met the young Israelis who operate the system, dedicated men and women who work now around the clock. In recent weeks, on average, over 100 rockets a day have been fired at Israel. Iron Dome has literally meant the difference between life and death. And I'm deeply proud that President Obama helped make it possible. And I'm proud that with his enthusiastic support, the United States will more than double our investment in Iron Dome in 2015. The President also instructed the Secretary of Defense to inform Congress last week that we support an additional $225 million to accelerate the production of Iron Dome components in Israel this year and maintain Israel's stockpile of interceptor missiles. Now Congress has a critical opportunity this week to fund the President's supplemental request so that Israel can remain secure. Iron Dome makes it clear yet again that America's got Israel's back. We've always had a truly special relationship ever since President Truman made America the first nation in the world to recognize the State of Israel in May 1948, just 11 minutes after David Ben-Gurion declared Israel's independence. The seeds of friendship planted that day have grown into a mighty oak, strong, sturdy, and enduring. Our governments have never been in closer touch, including through the delegation of senior officials from the Department of State, Treasury, and Defense, and the CIA, that I led to Israel on behalf of the President in May. We are in constant contact, constant consultation, constant cooperation. And by the way, that's why I was late getting here. So I was on the phone in the basement with my Israeli counterpart. So it is constant, it is daily, and it is highly constructive. Our commitment to protect Israel's qualitative military edge also remains absolute. Just ask Israel's generals. Our security assistance to Israel is at a record high. The relationship is even stronger between our peoples. Just last week, 30,000 Israelis came to the funeral of Max Steinberg, a young man from Los Angeles who joined the Israeli Defense Forces and was killed in Gaza. Another 20,000 came to pay respects to Sean Carmelli from Texas. Israel is not alone, not in war, not in peace. And because America staunchly supports Israel's future as a Jewish democratic state, we'll also continue doing what we can to bring about a just, comprehensive, and secure peace between Israelis and Palestinians. Two states for two peoples living side by side in peace and security. We're committed to strengthening Israel's security in achieving this goal and cementing Israel's rightful place among the community of nations. Which brings me to my next point. We don't just fight for Israel's security. We also fight for Israel's legitimacy. As President Obama said in Jerusalem, and I quote, "Those who adhere to the ideology of rejecting Israel's right to exist They might as well reject the earth beneath them or the sky above, because Israel is not going anywhere. No country is immune to criticism, nor should it be. But when that criticism takes the form of singling out just one country unfairly, bitterly, and relentlessly over and over and over, that's just wrong, and we all know it. I saw this firsthand during my years at the United Nations, where America always has Israel's back when its basic right of self-defense is challenged. Believe me, I remember all too well the fight against the deeply flawed Goldstone Report. So last week, when the United Nations Human Rights Council again passed a one-sided resolution calling for a commission of inquiry that will have no positive impact and should never have been created, the United States stood with Israel and said no. We were the lone vote in the Human Rights Council. Even our closest friends on the council abstained. It was 29-1, but the one, as usual, was America.
Now, this is where it really, I mean, you got to know all the pieces, because first of all, there's going to be more of this. I mean, isn't this amazing? Other than the fact, she just said, you know, she was an ambassador to the United Nations. She knows how the United Nations works. It's us that don't know. We're the ones that don't know how it works, but we've been learning. And so it looks like, wow, only America stood up for Israel. And I'm not trying to be critical. I'm just trying to let's just look at everything here. She understands how the UN works. So when she's saying this, she's not talking about the unstoppable voting bloc that always, always, always has a charged Israel with Ismail. You're fixing to see this, but I want you to see this, because we're gonna go right back to her speech. But you have to understand, she says, we're gonna go to break a minute, but listen, then come back and do this. But understand, so she understands what you're about to hear after come back from this break. She understands exactly that there is an unstoppable voting bloc inside the United Nations that wants to push Israel into the sea, who wants to do away with Israel, doesn't think that Israel has a right to exist. She knows that's there. And if you know that's there, you know when you bring this thing to a vote at the United Nations, you know how it's going to come out.
Mm-hmm.
But if America, if we don't know these things, we're going to think, my, look at us. Look at us.
No matter how you feel about the United Nations, it's the one place on planet Earth where nations get together and attempt to speak with one voice. That's why their resolutions can make a big difference. So when people all around the world see that approximately 40% of the UN Human Rights Council resolutions were against just one country, most of us would assume that country must be a really bad place. Perhaps ruled by, oh, say, a genocidal dictator who kills his own people, or maybe a tyrant continually threatening to annihilate another country. But actually, the country that has been condemned more times than every repressive country on Earth combined is a democracy. The only viable democracy in the Middle East, Israel. And with these repeated resolutions against Israel, it's easy to see why so many in the international community perceive Israel as a major cause of world problems. But are all these resolutions really justified? Because whether or not you agree with how Israel is handling its many challenges, when you do a basic comparison, like the number of deaths Israel is responsible for with the number of condemnations they've received, and then make that same comparison with other countries, it paints a surprising picture of a possible double standard. What could explain the enormous imbalance? Quick history lesson. In 1975, Cuba needed to gather support in order to take down the biggest democratic superpower dominating the global schoolyard, the United States. Seeing how the UN was mostly controlled by the democratic superpowers, Cuba, along with other communist nations, finally found a way to even the playing field, because it just so happened that, at the same time, a number of Muslim countries were looking for new creative ways to gang up on Israel. So the communists realized that by joining the Muslims' anti-Israel coalition, they could create an unstoppable voting bloc inside the UN. Because with every resolution they passed against Israel, they simultaneously discredited Israel's ally, the United States. So in 1975, the newfound communist-Muslim voting bloc spearheaded the passing of a UN resolution that officially stated, "Zionism is a form of racism." Yes, Zionism. The movement trying to find ways to protect Jews from racism was redefined as racism, which is kind of like saying the civil rights movement is racism and Martin Luther King is a racist. This is why resolution after resolution after resolution against Israel from 1975 until this day easily passes through the UN. But today, this movement has a new tool for attacking Israel as the cause of all our problems. The UN's Durban Review Conference on Racism.
So what we're talking about right here is understand. So she understands that's there, that voting bloc. Understand that our president has a 72% reportedly approval rate with American Muslims, which is that could be good. It's a good thing. And but also CBN reports as they're interviewing those in ISIS over in Syria and Iraq, they're saying that what's they're so motivated about? They say it's because they believe that our president is for them. They have signage and all that. Then you have Egyptians holding up signs and saying, you know, that we know America loves us. We love America, but your president's supporting
terrorists.
That's what they're saying.
Yeah.
And when you saw that, but also in regards to
when the president came to Israel and spoke at a college, he basically was saying that Israel needs to, you know, entrust themselves to the United Nations, knowing that this voting bloc votes against Israel all the time.
And it's very tempting to say, yeah, that's right. The United Nations, they do these great things. There's one thing, and they do great things, but there's one thing that they do consistently. They gang up on Israel.
Consistently bad.
And so she knew. So this is what I have to understand. She knew that video. I mean, she knew that the UN, she knew the UN is going to vote against Israel.
Right.
They knew that. And she's only one vote. And how many countries abstained from?
17 countries.
17 abstained. Countries just said, we're not even going to vote on it. What? Not even to say this is, and it's like, that's because this majority voting bloc is there. It's like, you know, and so understand that's what really bothers me in the context of this thing. And I really feel in my spirit that we need to pray for Israel. We need to just not buy into the video. We got to just say, I know it sounds good, but it's just not the video. Something's not right. When you've partnered with the Muslim Brotherhood, when you've actually empowered them in the Middle East, according to Congressman Michelle Bachmann, you've allowed them into leadership. The daughter of one of the leaders of the Muslim Brotherhood is the Secretary of State's assistant. And you're saying at the same time, you know this voting bloc is there. The Muslim Brotherhood knows this voting bloc is there. And it's like, it sounds so good, but we've went down this road so many times and something's not right. And we just got to pray, but go ahead and let's listen to the finish her speech here. What she is saying is true. America does stand with Israel. It's just them 530 folks sometimes in D.C. get a little confused. But in the end, America is going to stand. There's one thing she did say in there that I heard this time I didn't hear before. So long as America is a nation, is around, then Israel will have a friend. And it's like, I've seen fundamental transformation where it's almost like you don't want America to be here no more, right? We're fighting to have our country stand. You think about that, and it's like, okay. That's why you need to fight for the country. Yeah. That's why you need to stand up for God and country and Israel, because if America comes down, which I don't believe she is, understand what she's saying is Israel will not have any friends at all. Let's go right to Susan Rice.
We were the lone vote in the Human Rights Council. Even our closest friends on the council abstained. It was 29-1, but the one, as usual, was America. That's what we mean when we say you are not alone. We take that stand on principle. It's important not just for Israel, but for the credibility of the United Nations itself. The UN does exceptional, life-saving things around the world, empowering women and girls, keeping peace in far-flung conflict zones, providing humanitarian aid, whether in Gaza, Syria, or Congo, and elsewhere around the world. The world needs the United Nations. So when countries single out Israel for unfair treatment at the UN, it isn't just a problem for Israel. It's a problem for all of us. And today we also see anti-Semitism flaring up around the world, including in Europe. The pretext is the passions coming out of the current conflict. But we all know it has its roots in something ancient and ugly. And we should not shy away from calling it by its name. It's one thing to use the right of free expression to criticize particular policies of a particular government. No nation is immune from criticism, fair and otherwise, including our own. Take it from me as a former UN ambassador. It's one thing when the message is end the fighting. But when the message is death to the Jews, it's an outrage. And it's dangerous when the mayor of a major city takes to Twitter to invoke Hitler and incite hostility against the Israeli embassy, which he called, quote, the despicable murderer's consulate. That's just hate, and it's got to stop. As the late Tom Lantos used to say, and I quote, the veneer of civilization is paper thin. We are its guardians, and we can never rest. And so, when leaders in Tehran talk openly about ending the state of Israel, that's just one more reason why America is determined to prevent Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon. Under President Obama's leadership, we've marshaled unprecedented economic and diplomatic pressure on Iran. We've brought Iran to the negotiating table and signed a joint plan of action that halted Iran's progress on its nuclear program and rolled it back in key respects for the first time in nearly a decade. This interim agreement has given us time and space to try to negotiate a comprehensive solution. To date, we've made meaningful progress on some key issues, although we remain far apart on several others. As a result, we decided, along with the European Union, Germany, and the other permanent members of the Security Council, to extend the agreement until November 24. Our goal remains clear: a comprehensive, verifiable deal that can assure the world that Iran will not obtain a nuclear weapon and that will offer confidence that Iran's nuclear program is exclusively peaceful. But let me be blunt about two things. Maybe I should say two other things. First, we will not accept a bad deal under any circumstances. Even if that means no deal. And second, we will do what we must to prevent Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon. All of this is rooted in a very special friendship between the United States and Israel, stretching back from before Israel's birth to today. And for me, it's rooted in powerful personal experience. I'll never forget my very first visit to Israel. I was just 14, and I went with my younger brother and my beloved late father, who was then on the board of Transworld Airlines. On that trip, we bowed our heads at Yad Vashem, floated in the Dead Sea, walked the lanes of the old city, climbed Masada, and picked fruit at a kibbutz. I learned by heart the words of the Shema. And here's something that's always stayed with me. To go on that first trip, I was privileged to take one of the very first flights from Cairo to Tel Aviv, just after Israel and Egypt had signed the Camp David Accords. That peace seemed impossible for so long, but it wasn't. That peace, enduring to this day, reminds us that human conflict and human problems can be resolved by human courage. You know that. It's why you're here today. And it's why I came too. My friends, these are difficult days. But as Israel's former president and my friend Shimon Peres likes to say, there are no hopeless situations, just hopeless people. We all know a few. So let us remember, especially in troubled times, that despair is a sin and service is a duty. America doesn't lose hope. The Jewish people don't lose hope. And the state of Israel doesn't lose hope. That's why Israel's national anthem is Hatikva, the hope. And that's why in this imperfect and dangerous world, we ask together for God's blessing and help. We pray for security and peace, but we know that it's not enough just to pray for it. We've got to work for it together, united, and determined. Because, as President Kennedy once said, here on earth, God's work must truly be our own. And that's what we strive to do together every day. Thank you.
We're going to continue talking about this. This is so important, our next program. You got to catch our next program because Rabbi David Saperstein has been appointed by the president, the first Jew ever appointed as president over the persecuted church and over the persecuted religion across the world, you know, that kind of oversees that. Mm-hmm. This is all kind of tie in together. You've got to be able to catch our next program because we're going to break this down because I believe, I can't help but think that Naboth just got invited to the table and sat between two scoundrels for one reason. The Ahab and Jezebel wants his land.
Wow.
But we got to say, no, that's his inheritance. You've just been listening to the highlights from VFN-TV and the Data Radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light. Listen or watch more programs and check out the VFN Torch at VFNTV.com. Don't forget about our VFN-TV app, where no matter where you are, you can take the light with you and share it with your friends. We want to thank our sponsors and partners who make this program possible. Take the time and support our sponsors. You can locate them at VFNTV.com and select sponsors. If you'd like to become a sponsor or a partner, you can do so at VFNTV.com. VFN TV and the Daily Radio Program, where we're keeping the conversation light.